The problem is that she may have ended up in a situation where she is more likely to be traumatized than her peers because of her ADHD. And that is not saying that, you know, your skirt was too short, you brought this up on your own. It's never the case. But the case is that ADHD is a significant risk factor for teenage girls to become victimized and to become traumatized.
Hello and welcome to the Women and ADHD podcast. I'm your host, Katie Weber. I was diagnosed with ADHD at the age of 45, and it completely turned my world upside down. I've been looking back at so much of my life, school, jobs, my relationships, all of it with this new lens, and it has been nothing short of overwhelming. I quickly discovered I was not the only woman to have this experience, and now I interview other women who, like me, discovered in adulthood they have ADHD and are finally feeling like they understand who they are and how to best lean into their strengths, both professionally and personally.
Okay, before we get started, I would love to share with you this review from a listener named Deanna. It's entitled Tears. I just finished listening to your interview with Linda Yee. It made me very emotional. What an amazing story. Thank you, Katie, for introducing me to such great women and helping me to accept myself more and more with each interview. At almost 63, that says a lot. You have changed my life. Maybe I'll actually get an official diagnosis. Keep doing the wonderful work you are doing. Well, thank you, Deanna. I really appreciate your feedback, and I love knowing that this podcast has helped in such a tremendous way. And if anyone's out there listening to this podcast and you found it helpful, this is a friendly reminder to head over to Apple Podcasts or Audible, and you can now leave feedback on individual episodes on Spotify. And if that feels like too much, and I totally get it, you could also just quickly hit those 5 stars. It makes a real difference. In fact, before you forget, why don't you just pause right now and do it, and I promise we'll wait for you. Okay, here we are at episode 170, in which I interview Lotta Borg Skoglund. Lotta is a senior physician and associate professor in psychiatry at Uppsala University in Sweden. Lotta's work centers on ADHD and women, especially around how hormones impact the mental health of girls and women. She has authored several books on the subject, including ADHD Girls to Women, Getting on the Radar, which was released in English in 2023. Lotta not only has years of experience in healthcare, working in both primary care and specialized psychiatry, but her list of academic accomplishments is a mile long. And she helped to create the Goddess ADHD Research Group, which stands for Gender-Informed Research to Overcome Diagnostic Delay and Emotional Dysregulation Through Self-Awareness and Self-Efficacy in Female ADHD. Lotta is also one of the founders of Letter Life, a science and evidence-based app that provides girls and women with ADHD insight and power over how their everyday life is affected by hormones, ADHD symptoms, and other lifestyle factors. Lotta and I talk all about the profound lack of research around women, hormones, and ADHD, as well as some of the incredible work she's doing to even the playing field. We also talk about the biological differences between the male and female brains and why that contributes to the lack of diagnoses for girls. And we discuss how girls and women alike are being abandoned by the medical system even after their diagnoses. Now, before I get to this interview, I wanted to add that the English copy of Lotta's book, which is fantastic, by the way, was published by Jessica Kingsley Publishers in the UK. They publish so many tremendous neurodivergent authors. Go take a look at their selection of books. It's amazing. You're going to want to get your hands on all of them. So that said, we have an exclusive discount for women and ADHD listeners. If you use the code WAPOD20, you'll get 20% off the book when you purchase it directly from the publisher at jkp.com. And of course, that link is in the show notes. Okay, without further ado, here is my interview with Lotta. Somebody needs to pinch me. There's some days where I feel like, I can't believe this is my job. I can't believe this is my job that I get to interview incredible women like the guest I have today. Welcome, Lotta. This is just incredible. Okay, so a little bit of background story and then I'll stop rambling. So one of my former clients, Annette, she's out there, she's listening. Hi, Annette. She's amazing. And she's from Denmark. And she wrote me and she said, you have to read Lotta's book. You have to interview her. She is the shit in Sweden and Denmark when it comes to women and ADHD. And I was like, okay, well, how am I going to get this esteemed, you know, researcher and medical clinician? How am I going to convince her to get on my podcast? And literally the next day, I received an email from your publisher and it was like all the stars aligned. Oh my goodness, I was so excited. So where do we start? I mean, I guess we could start. You were diagnosed with ADHD in adolescence.
Late adolescence, I'd say.
Late adolescence. So in high school? So
young adult, yeah.
Oh, okay. What were some of the things that you put together, put two and two together to think this could be ADHD or I should look into this?
Well, it wasn't really that much knowledge back then, right? And especially not around girls. So I would say I couldn't get the picture to fit with kind of my life. That was pretty awesome. And then I just could not get it to work for me. And I was so interested in things and I was so excited about so much. And then when I started to dig into it and to learn about it, it was like my brain totally just shut down. And I thought that was really scary and that I couldn't really trust my brain. And I couldn't really trust my instincts in a way, because who am I if I find this so interesting that I engage in it? And then when I do, it is like I am just zooming out and my brain is all over the place and thinking about other stuff. And I kept, putting it on like a later account. So I will read this. I will do this later. And then it kind of kept piling up to a point where I kind of broke down and I quit. And then I started something else. So I think that was kind of a revelation. And I've been asking around, of course. I'm from a family where, like, my father's a psychiatrist. You're either a veterinarian or a psychiatrist in my family. So there wasn't any really lack of knowledge. And I thought, my parents I had a really safe upbringing. Everything was kind of good and I couldn't get my shit together. And I thought that was really, really both annoying and worrying for the rest of my life. So I started feeling but afraid of how am I going to manage life on my own, basically. And then I met a person who said, well, could this be ADHD? I was like, no, of course not, because I didn't know anything. And I was also training to be a psychiatrist at that, same point when this was. So this was after med school. Yeah, this was after med school. But I was training to be a psychiatrist. So, and still I haven't heard about it. So that is kind of something that makes me really humble when I meet other women who are diagnosed later in life, realizing that and me and my colleagues, we were not trained to acknowledge and to find and to search for this and to look for this and to ask for this in girls and or in females and in adults, basically. So that was a long, long story of a journey that ended with the diagnosis. And then what I see in so many, many women that I meet also, a couple of years after that where I kept kind of gaslighting myself and saying, well, I fooled them. It's probably just because, I didn't tell them this. And I can do a lot of stuff, right? So I spend a lot of time after my diagnosis also wasting that time instead of starting, get shit done. So that is also something that I try to communicate really clearly. It's like, okay, yeah, you may have fooled me. I don't think so. I'm a pretty experienced psychiatrist and ADHD doctor at this point, and also a researcher. So I know a lot of things, and I specialize in female ADHD. So yeah, you might have fooled me, but the odds are, not in your favor in that. So start, start working as if you had ADHD, if you have ADHD, and then we'll see. If you fooled me and there's something else and it's not ADHD, well, we haven't wasted that much time, because ADHD accommodations and ADHD kind of setting up your ADHD life, that is much like for people with diabetes. It's like if you keep this diet for your diabetes, that's good for everyone. Everyone could use this recommendation, these diets. Like so it's I think it's it can say a lot about the same thing about ADHD.
Yeah. Well, I think also comparing it to the diet and diabetes is interesting because one of the things I think about ADHD, and again, one of the questions we talk about a lot on this podcast is this socialized, right? Which is like in women, I feel like we have to have tried everything. We have to be at our wit's end before we ask for help, right? So accommodations, we have to show how much we are struggling and how much we have tried to do this on our own before we even ask for help. And that's like, that feels like a very uniquely female perspective.
Yeah.
So interesting. So now what I've read a lot of books on ADHD at this point, and I feel like one of the things I loved, I just absolutely love your book. So thank you so much. I'm, you know, one of my questions, I actually reached out to Annette and I said, are there any questions you want to make sure I ask Lota? And she said, when are your other ADHD books going to be released in English? Because I'm like, I want to read them all now. Do you have plans?
I am so happy to hear that. And thank you, Annette, if you're listening for this, because, you know, I have to pinch myself equally hard as you, because I have been, you know, I've been emailing my publisher, like, she's so tired of me. It's like, are you sure I can't get on any podcast? I want to tell you, I'm so proud of this book. It's like a dream come true. And it's so close to my heart, of course. So I've been I write about my patients and I put their stories, like all these women that I've met during the years, and to be able to tell their story and to realize that it's not only relevant for in a Swedish context, in a Scandinavian and Danish context, but it seems to be also relevant. So this is kind of a universal language that we're talking here. And so, and that, I think that's so beautiful and so empowering, in a sense, right?
Mm-hmm. So that leads to my question about the biological differences, because I don't feel like a lot, you know, I'm always like, what are we talking about when we're talking about ADHD? I get very confused about, are we talking about behavioral symptoms? Are we talking about a brain? What is genetic? What is socialized? Nobody seems to know. What is hormonal? And I really appreciate how much you delve into the biological differences of the brain and the, you know, frontal cortex and the cerebellum. So if you're out there and you really love to geek out about this, this is absolutely the book for you. Tell me more about, what are some of the biological difference between a girl's brain and a boy's brain when it comes to some of the different presentations of ADHD, and in the context of why girls are so commonly overlooked?
Yeah. So I think what I'm trying to communicate in this book is that it's biology and social expectations, right? But that biology counts. And that if we keep like using the male brain and the male body as the norm, we will fail to recognize the girls and the women, right? The obvious thing is that girls and boys, males and females, when we look from a hormonal perspective, we are like two subspecies of the same animal species, right? So for girls and for females, starting a couple of years before puberty, when our like the sex hormones, the estrogen and progesterone, starts increasing, and knowing that our brains are scattered, there are like hormone receptors all over the place. So from like embryogenesis, then actually having a little bit of a pause during like childhood, where we are like toddlers, because then the biological differences are not that marked, because then we don't produce a lot of sex hormones. But a couple of years before puberty, we will start producing our main sex hormones. So for girls, it will be estrogen and progesterone, and for boys, it will be testosterone. And they tend to affect the brain in a very different way. And looking at the research then, looking at the female lifespan, we can see kind of perfect overlaps of where we as females have vulnerable periods in our lives. So looking at when the comorbidity hits us, for example, so like during these pre-puberty, pubertal years, there's a lot of females with ADD and ADHD that will tell us that, you know, they get just, you know, they can't regulate their energy anymore. So they get so tired and they start getting anxious about that. And they start, you know, trying to deal with that energy loss with food or trying to do other stuff that, you know, keeps kicking the comorbidity circus and have that going, right? So, and then you see that in every menstrual cycle, after ovulation, where estrogen levels kind of tampers down and falls back and progesterone levels starts rising. We also have this periods where women report that we are vulnerable in relation to stress, in relation to depression, anxiety, even like serious psychiatric disorders or symptoms like psychotic symptoms or manic symptoms in bipolar disorders, and also relapsing to eating disorders and addiction. Very like overlapping very viciously with our premenstrual phase. So between ovulation and the next period. And then we have pregnancy and postpartum. And the postpartum period, very vulnerable for females. And then we have equally like prolonged period before menopause. So like up to 10 years around menopause, where the hormonal levels and the estrogen levels starts fluctuating again. So I think talking about biology is super important when it comes to ADHD. We are far from understanding exactly how these hormonal fluctuations affect our brain. And it's also, it seems to be very individual. So it's not like we can build a firm theoretical framework today and say, okay, so all women with ADHD react like this. But on a group level, it seems like we have these vulnerable periods. And on top of this, we have to put the social expectations and what we as a like a social structure or social creatures think about how a typical girl or a typical boy should behave. So it seems like when we look at our brains on a group level, it seems like girl brains on a group level prioritize processes that stimulates enhance our abilities to function socially, to be able to perceive what other people expect of us. Whereas it seems like for boys, their brains on a group level, that's super important. It's always much more difference between two individuals than two groups, of course. But on a group level, it seems like typical boys, if you are allowed to say that, but group boys on the group level anyway, they prioritize other part of the brain's abilities, like, for example, coordinating hand, foot, and visual and motor skills, for example. We assume that since the biology has been prioritizing differently for girls and for boys, we have also learned to expect that from boys and girls. When girls fall out of that kind of framework, we don't know what to do. And it's also because of girls being more like socially aware earlier on in life, like more socially advanced earlier on in life, ADHD, ADD girls, they know what other people or adults expect from them. So they start finding strategies, they start masking, they start putting more and more and more energy into just being normal, as they say, and yeah, right?
The Albert Camus quote.
Yeah, and that's actually how this book started, because I started thinking, because you always think that you yourself is you're so unique, right? But then I started thinking, it's like all the women that I meet that eventually get an ADHD diagnosis, they say something that is always on the theme of like, I've always known that I'm different, but I don't know exactly why. And or I've always known that I'm not normal, but I've tried to explain that to people and they say, well, I also think that it's difficult too. And I also feel very exhausted in social, you know, I'm not a person who likes cocktail parties either. It's like, but it's not that. It's like they are trying to normalize something in me that I'm really, really, you know, I'm searching for the answer of why I am, you know, different. So I think that's something that starts very early on for girls with ADHD.
Well, and there was something you said about your upbringing too that I resonated with, because I was, you know, often from university on was diagnosed with depression and anxiety, and then again postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, and there was always that feeling of it not fitting, but also feeling like, well, I have a great life. I have a supportive partner. I have children. I had a wonderful upbringing. Why do I insist on being depressed? Right? It was like, I couldn't even get that right. And so it is, it's that feeling of just offness that is so difficult to articulate.
And I think that's also, you know, for me, as I said, coming from a family of psychiatrists, then if you feel that something is off, you're sent to a psychologist, then you're sent into therapy, right? What I was experiencing in therapy, because I was searching. So I also thought that I needed therapy. But what I pushed back on very early on in therapy was when a therapist started to try to build a story around why I was struggling. So it was always like, well, your parents probably haven't affirmed you, or I was always told that I was this a person who needed affirmation and that I needed to be this good girl, and I needed to be like, why do you always have to be, everything has to be perfect. So they assumed that there was some kind of trauma in me, and I could never relate to that, because no, on the contrary. I think that there are a lot of girls and women with ADHD who can actually be traumatized by having that kind of explanatory model told to them. So this is why this is so difficult for you. This is why you're struggling. And I never felt that that was an appropriate explanation. And that was also very important for me when I got the diagnosis and I realized, well, okay, so this is this is a different battle for me. This is still a battle. There's a lot of things that I have to do differently, and I have to take care of myself in a totally different way than my friends. But I don't have to, you know, blame my parents. I don't have to quit or get out of a lot of relationships. So I thought that, you know, a lot of things got explained in the wrong way. So now I know that it's not other people's fault that I, you know, can feel socially anxious in situation, or I get really, really socially exhausted by things. I just know that that is my ADHD brain, and I don't blame others. And I think that has been a huge advantage for me, because otherwise you tend to get very either defensive or disappointed in life, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also love the, you know, the whole conversation around this orchid or dandelion, right? This this genetic element of a brain that reacts more adversely to types of trauma like neglect, mm-hmm. or abuse. Right. And I mean, right. I don't think I've met a woman who hasn't experienced some form of sexual trauma and sexualization from a young age. So a lot of that is a traumatic experience. And I think there's probably some connection there with the overlap of ADHD and autism and gender nonconforming, gender dysphoria. Like, I think that's such a fascinating topic too, right? So it's like, how do you begin to parse? How do you begin to even unravel the brain's reaction to those small T traumas? Like you said, a life undiagnosed or a life of experiencing these senses of like fundamental rejection that many women experience in terms of their worth and their value in the room. So that's where I get really confused about what are we talking about.
Yeah, but I think, you know what, I think it's really good to admit that you're confused, because I think it's when we force this, you know, if we try to simplify these associations, I think we go wrong. We risk at going wrong there. So I think it's really brave of you. And I think also the older I get and the more kind of diplomas and titles I get, the more kind of brave also I get to admit how little we know. We know. And I think I was much, you know, more scared years back to admit that it took me, when I wrote my PhD, it took me 4 years after my dissertation to understand what my thesis was about. I never admitted that to anyone, of course. And I did. I passed. But when you try to be bigger than you are and try to find explanations that are not really like ripe yet, they're not, you know, they need some more information to be sustainable. So I think that's really, really healthy. And I think we should do that much more. And I think we have to also, maybe that's a good ADHD trait, that you don't tolerate uncertainty or that the puzzle is not laid yet. But we have to live with that and to learn to live with that. Actually, that's funny that you said, and it's funny that you told me about Annette, because I went to Copenhagen.
She was there. She heard you.
Yeah. Oh, she was there. Then she knows that I was there. And I talked for 2 days. I had no idea when before how this would go. I've never done it before. And I was supposed to talk about female ADHD hormones. And the take-home message is that hormones matter, but we don't really know exactly how. And then I have to give a two-day talk on on a topic where I basically have to say, you know, the jury is out still. And we had so much fun and we learned so much from each other. And it was like such a giving and rewarding experience. So if we can admit that and we can start pulling out the different, you know, stories and testimonies and see where do we all like fit this together, I think we can do really, really good things together. But there are still a lot of pieces in the puzzle that is missing. And that's a shame because we haven't focused on girls and women historically in the research. But I think we're getting there and we are filling in the blanks one by one.
You know, I've gone back to school to become a mental health counselor. And so I'm finding that even in the curriculum, like every case study, client presents with depression, anxiety. And I'm like, it's everywhere. Everywhere I'm diagnosing clients with ADHD. And that makes sense because so many of us end up with these comorbid diagnoses. But it's, you know, if I was in my 20s, I probably would have been like, huh, that's interesting. I don't know if I've got this right. But I feel like now that I'm more experienced, I come at these with like, oh, I have a lot to offer this field because nobody is talking about this, right?
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me that it's not at all, you know, that neurodivergence just isn't part of the curriculum. So you had also mentioned in the book the difference between the DSM and the ICD, the International Classification of Diseases, and how it feels like the DSM is more amenable to the diagnosis for women versus the ICD. What's the difference there? Can you talk more about that?
So first of all, I think from a Scandinavian perspective, it's been that we entered the DSM-5 in 2013-14, and we still haven't really implemented ICD-11. So we are living with an old version in the DSM-5 from the DSM-4, it was intentionally relaxed on the diagnostic criteria to better fit adults and also like other displays of ADHD than the typical like boy norm. So I think that is one of the things that has affected and that the DSM-5 has very intentionally actually relaxed the diagnostic criteria to open up for other symptom displays. But there are still a lot of things, and I know because I read in the email that you were thinking about also the emotional dysregulation. Why is that not even like taken up as examples of impulsivity and hyperactivity in a way where for females specifically, in my opinion, that is the thing that is the most impairing for females, and it gets worse with age. So a lot of things when living with ADHD, knowing about your ADHD, a lot of things gets better. And a lot of things gets better with time, but the emotional dysregulation tends to be this scar that you have experienced a lot of things due to your difficulties in regulating emotions that will affect how you approach the world, basically. And so many women with ADHD end up lonely and feeling lonely and feeling failure in their relationships. And again, we have different expectations of girls and women, boys. We will not raise our eyebrows that much of a boy who is just, you know, super focused on his things and don't really tend to the other social activities there. So we say, oh, this is a little nerd and he'll get around. It's like, but for a girl, it's like, whoa, this is really very, this is something, you know, off with her. And also for us as adult women, how much of the social kind of interplay that is expected of us and our like dudes, they just tag along. It's like, oh, there's dinner at that place. There's dinner at that place. Did you get, you know, the Christmas gifts for blah, blah. And if you fail that as a woman, it's much more like you put on yourself and also what other people kind of tend to think. It is easier, it seems, for society to kind of like shake off if a dad forgets the kid's gym bag. It's like, ah, oh, dads will be dads, right? But if I, as a mom, forget to like bake for the school sale or don't have like the snacks at home, that it's like I'm a really shitty mom, and it's like there's something wrong with this family, right? So there's such a totally different social expectation on girls from start, and then on us as women, and that is, of course, mirrored in why the diagnostic criteria feels so off sometimes for us, and why I think it can become problematic for a unexperienced clinician to recognize ADHD if you just look at the diagnostic criteria of the and then. But from the DSM-5, we have had a little bit of a relaxation that is making it a little bit easier anyway for the clinicians to involve like female specific symptoms. But it's far from like adapted or sufficient, I would say.
Right. Yeah. Now, I noticed you've been saying ADHD, ADD. Is that something you intentionally do to be more inclusive? Because I know, like, I certainly never thought I had ADHD because of the name. Many women, I'm sure, the hyperactivity element, they don't relate to. And I've often wondered why, when the three presentations were rolled under the ADHD umbrella, what was behind that choice? Because it feels like it's a disservice to women and girls to have those presentations all listed under ADHD. Do you know what the history is there?
Yeah. Yes, I know. Yeah. So why I say why I say also ADD is because I usually I get reminded after having like a course in 2 days and then someone says like, I just have a question. Are you going to talk at all about ADD? It's like, oh my God, I thought I was so bad in the beginning that I do not make any difference between those, because I think as a neuroscientist and as a clinician, I don't think it really has any true bearing. It has for the person and to be able to explain your difficulties, I think. And that I have seen on a lot of my patients, and it's really important for them. So like, no, I have ADD. Aha, okay. So it has a value, it has a meaning. But for me as a clinician, it's the same assessment. What I see is like you can have ADD symptoms in a part of your life, and then you have more of an ADHD symptomatology. And for females, I would say they have kind of a hockey stick situation where you typically see the boys having a lot of hyperactivity that is, you know, obvious they can maybe disruptive and be, you know, all over the place. And then sometimes during puberty or like in the early teens, the hyperactivity tends to kind of go away, but the inattention symptomatology is kind of stable for the boys. So it seems like then this boy or this teenage boy has grown out of his ADHD, right? Because the hyperactivity, impulsivity is not as visible for the people around. It's not. And we know that it's the inattention symptoms that is associated to the adverse outcomes. So we have wrongfully assumed that the boy would grow out of his ADHD because of the hyperactivity kind of being less prominent, right? But the girls, they tend to do like a different trajectory where they fly under our radar when they are small girls. They are masking, they're conforming, they are adapting, they're trying to fit in, they're struggling, they're super stressed, and they say they're like overwhelmed but they look like white knuckle, and they are making it, and people tend to say, yeah, you're really good, but you just have to try a little bit harder, you know, you should just, if you just listen a little bit less, and they you know, they absorb that, and they try, but then we miss them, they fly under our radar, outside our radar, and then they enter puberty, and the hormones kick in. Approximately the same time as the boys start, you know, behaving a little bit better, the girls start to, you know, be more extroverted. And then they start, you know, having more of the hyperactivity, impulsivity symptoms. You were talking about trauma, and one of our, like, biggest concerns here are the small girls that we have missed that have developed a very low self-esteem, entering puberty, realizing that sexual capital is a currency where I can get some kind of affirmation and I can get some kind of acceptance and I can be like, I'm trying to fit in, I'm trying to be loved by someone, right? And then they are on our radar, they are in our face because they start, you know, behaving in a way that when they take risks, right? And it's also coexisting with the first time where you try alcohol or perhaps even stronger drugs, maybe for the first time in your life, right? So you may end up in so dangerous and harmful situation. So due to your ADHD, you end up in situation where you risk being victimized, traumatized, and then we fail them again because then we find their symptoms and we say, this poor girl, she's acting out or she's depressed or she's having like these nightmares because she's been traumatized. And we miss her ADHD again because we kind of look at the trauma. And the problem here, and the problematic and the difficult thing to communicate to both the girls, their parents, and to healthcare professionals is that, yes, she has been traumatized. Yes, she may have a lot of symptoms due to trauma. But the problem is that she may have ended up in a situation where she is more likely to be traumatized than her peers because of her ADHD. And that is not saying that, you know, your skirt was too short, you brought this up on your own. It's never the case. But the case is that ADHD is a significant risk factor for teenage girls to become victimized and to become traumatized. And that is such an important topic and something that I feel so passionate about finding these girls before they become teenage women with ADHD and ending up in situation that might scar them for life, actually.
Hey, friend, if there's one thing I've learned about ADHD over the last few years is that we can thrive with the right combination of accountability, planning, coaching, and peer support. Knowing all this, I set out to create the ultimate all-in-one coaching and accountability community for adults with ADHD or learning disabilities. I knew I couldn't do it alone, so I joined forces with one of my favorite ADHD coaches, Alex Gilbert of Capable Consulting, and together we launched the ADHD Lounge. The Lounge was created as a safe place for neurodivergent adults away from other social media, where we offer live group calls, co-working, and body doubling every weekday for accountability, focus, and skill development. We have weekly and monthly goal planning sessions to keep yourself on track. We also have one-on-one office hours with myself and Alex, and of course, friendship and lots of peer support. We have three different membership levels to meet you where you're at. So if you're looking for an affordable way to stay connected, productive, and accountable, while also having regular access to ADHD coaching and expertise, then make sure to come join me in the ADHDLounge.com. Again, that's the ADHDLounge.com. And as a listener of the Women in ADHD podcast, you can get 30% off your first month with the code PODCAST30. So head to the ADHDLounge.com and use the code PODCAST30 to get 30% off your first month. During the early days of my diagnosis, as I was deep into hyper-focus ADHD research mode, I kept searching for some kind of all-in-one, everything you ever needed to know about ADHD in women handbook that I could reference and keep at my fingertips, but I never really found anything that suited me. That's why I've taken everything I've learned about ADHD in women and adults who are socialized as girls, and I've gathered it into a concise, easy-to-access, self-guided, and self-paced course so you can feel like you've got everything you need at your fingertips. It's called Hey, It's ADHD, and it has everything you need to start loving your brain and living a more fulfilling, gratifying life. I built this course to be helpful wherever you are on your ADHD journey. I am so excited to finally be able to offer this course, and I truly hope this will help you develop a deeper understanding of your ADHD brain and how to embrace it as you build yourself a toolkit for your own life. So head over to womenandadhd.com and click on the Hey, It's ADHD course tab for more information and to get started. I remember very early on feeling so frustrated by a lot of the therapeutic treatment where there was just that lack of curiosity. It was so solution focused. It was so like, you have depression and anxiety, as though you caught it in the air without tracing, like, where, keep going. Why are, like, keep uncovering, and, you know, being so quick to figure out, okay, well, you know, change your behaviors or medicate or something, but, you know, not getting to the root of, like, the essence of these behaviors. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And I think it's so important for me. And I can also almost see when you work with people, how, like, their shoulders just, you know, go, oh, okay. So this is how it's all tied together. And I think it's so, I think it's like knowledge. I always this is my mantra, like, knowledge is power. So knowledge about how your brain works, knowledge about your ADHD, your unique neurodiverse brain. And that's why I'm gagging all about this ADHD 24/7 model, because I think we need kind of a framework to put our unique ADHD profile into, to be able to start working with this. Otherwise, if we simplify it, then we're just telling people to go blindfolded into, like, the war of life. It's like, you need to know why you have to struggle a little bit harder with this than others. Otherwise, I think it's almost re-traumatizing to say to people, just do this. It's like asking a kid to eat things or to wear things that is, like, you have this perceptual sensitivity. It's like, you wouldn't do that to a child. And you shouldn't do that to an adult person or adult woman either, to ask of them to try to treat their depressive symptoms and try to fight their social anxiety without giving them a theoretical rationale of why this is so much harder for me than for others. Otherwise, it's like setting you up for failure, I think. And what you need when you have failed so much in your life previously, I think you need to feel at every step of the way you are. So, but you want to, you know, tap yourself on the back saying, you go, girl. That's great. You ace that cocktail party. It's like, yeah, everyone else thinks that's, it's awesome, you know, to go to a cocktail party. Yeah, I was invited. No, not for me. It's like, okay, I'm going to go there. I know it's worth it. I love the people who's there, and I love the guy or the girl hosting it. I am going to go there. I'm going to be exhausted for 2 days afterwards. It's like, oh, all this, you know, people talking, and what am I missing, and did I say something stupid now? It's like, I need to bring that with me to the cocktail party. Otherwise, I'm twice, you know, it's a double whammy. It's I'm twice the loser there. So I'm there and people expect of me to enjoy it. I don't really, but I don't want to miss it. So I think it's so important that we get, as you were saying, it's like, we need the explanation. We need to know why certain things in life is an uphill struggle. And why we still have to struggle uphill, because we have to do it, because a lot of the things are important for us or for our loved ones. And a lot of things I need to do to live a healthy, a long life. And it doesn't come natural to me, but it's much easier to do it if I know that, okay, I put twice as much energy into this simple thing than the other guy or the other girl there. And I should feel very proud of myself doing it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's also, you know, not only the psychoeducation, but also just figuring out the tools for your coping strategies, the toolbox that never worked for you before, right? Other people would give you this advice and it never worked for you. And so the assumption was, well, it's my problem. I'm the problem, right? And it's like, there's, you know, thinking about getting through the cocktail party, it reminded me of when I had an MRI for the first time, and I came out of it and I was like, why does nobody talk about how crazy that experience is? And I realized, because nobody told me how long this was going to take. So I was in this as perfectly still. It's a nightmare for somebody with ADHD. Perfectly still. I had no idea how long this was going to happen. I had no idea how long I was going to be in there for. And so I just had to get to this, like, disassociation where I was like, I live here now, I guess. Like, I...
That's an awesome example of metacognitive, you know, breakdown.
But you think about how many times that is that no explanation is given. It's just like, you know, menopause. The way of dealing with menopause is grit your teeth and get through it. It's over eventually, right? And so many things happen to women. New motherhood. Oh, it's fine. You'll just get, you know, eventually you'll get through it. Just, you know, grit your teeth.
No, but it's natural. It's natural. No, it's so much fun. I need to tell you, when my male colleagues, they start, you know, doing all this evolutionary natural thing, you know, and they start explaining all these things with a natural. So I used to say, okay, so if we're going to talk about natural, then the normal or natural thing for a female on the savannah, because they always like to talk about on the Stone Age, you know, when we were like hunters or gatherers. Okay, fine. Let's talk about when we were hunters and gatherers. The natural thing for a woman would be to get pregnant when they're like 12, 13, 14, perhaps. The natural thing would be like to have 10, 15 pregnancies, perhaps. Maybe 6, 8 of those kids survived. And then the natural thing would be like to die giving birth, because that's kind of the most dangerous thing that you do. So being born or giving birth is the most dangerous thing a woman can do. And then, so you want to talk about what's natural. And I think that's so typical. And say that, you know, I'm a neuroscientist. I'm a doctor. I'm a researcher. I'm a woman. I have 3 teenage daughters. I have a mother. I have a mother-in-law who's a psychiatrist. I was totally unprepared for menopause, for perimenopause. Totally. I had no idea what to do. It's like, no one told me about the postpartum situation. No, it's like, it's, as you say, it's like, well, that's natural. That's something that women just do. And then you think, well, perhaps it is something that, you know, neurotypical females, you know, can struggle through. It's difficult. It's tough for a lot of, you know, women, regardless of your neurocognitive status. But for females with ADHD, I see it all the time that during these periods of vulnerability or hormonal vulnerability, people really, really struggle. And there's a lot at stake, right? Talking about, you know, postpartum depression, you already have 3 kids and then you kind of go down in the basement, mood-wise and hormonally, and everyone's just like, well, everyone struggles. It's normal to feel stressed out if you have 2 small kids and you're, you know, lactating. It's normal. And then that is kind of what you get. What we've seen, what I've seen in my research, is that we tend to miss the girls, and then they end up as females getting an ADHD diagnosis eventually, if they get it. And then they get abandoned again, because you only get like, okay, so I got my diagnosis and I didn't get anything else, like an explanatory model or anything, and I got a prescription and I'm supposed to know. So now what, right? So and our slogan, our mantra is no girl left behind, no woman abandoned. Maybe that is what we're trying to achieve. It's a grand mission, I know. But it feels like that is what's happening all the time. We miss the girls, and then when they struggle enough and they scream high enough to get an assessment and a diagnosis, then they get the prescription and then they get abandoned again. That is that.
Right. Or told to lower your expectations, right? Just be grateful we're still not on the savannah.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's talk about the app. The Letter Life app is there like a communal biofeedback element to this app, or is it really just a community of skills and strategies? Or it feels like it's an interactive experience, right?
Yeah, it is. It's supposed to be an interactive experience, and basically what we're trying to do, we're trying to co-create and we build as we go. So we are a couple of researchers trying to use our like neuroscience background of and knowing about from epidemiology. Okay, so what do we know from research that females struggle with? How can we, based on that knowledge, together with females with ADHD, how can we build a tool that solves this abandonment situation, basically? So what we're trying to do, what we have done, is that you track yourself on your different biological phenotype. So your hormones and how you're doing in life, in everyday life. And then there's also this community where you can share your experiences with others. So and the aim is to be less dependent on healthcare. And the aim is to fix the situation that we showed in our latest study was published last week, actually, is called Time After Time. And what we saw in that epidemiological study is that females get diagnosed 4 years later than boys, four extremely formative years of their lives, where we actually have the opportunity to become equals with our male peers. So we have the opportunity to get an education. We have the opportunity to, if we don't, you know, end up with all the adverse outcomes that is associated with female ADHD. So if we don't fall short of comorbidity, if we don't fall short of sexual risk taking and end up becoming teenage mothers, that we also in our research group showed last year that teenage girls and adolescent women with ADHD have a 6 times increased risk of becoming teenage mothers. So these are formative years where we can base like the fundament and the family planning for a life that is equal and that is social, psychologically healthy. In a lot of senses. So what we are trying to do with Letter Life is that we are trying to look, instead of looking from a research perspective, we are looking from the female perspective. Okay, so what are females with ADHD struggling with? Well, we're struggling with a situation where we call the 7 deadly sins, the 7 factors that is actually associated with 8 to 13 years decreased life expectancy in adult ADHD. So we are looking at what all people know that they have to do, but that is so much more difficult when you have ADHD. So getting routines for diet, for sleep, for exercise, for work-life balance and stress, for emotional regulation, addictive behaviors, and for life structure, like meeting your doctor or appointments or paying your bills and stuff like that. So we have tried to build an app where you track yourself on these 7 deadly sins and see how your abilities and how you're doing fluctuates with your hormonal cycle or with if you have hormonal contraceptives or if you take other, if you have other treatments. I can see how it is all tied together. And the aim, of course, is, again, knowledge is power. Knowing how your life plays out and where your ADHD messes up things in your life makes you a much more skilled patient, if you want. You can give your healthcare professional a better data-driven decision, form to make decisions for your treatment or for psychosocial treatment or for medical treatment as well. But it's a very exciting venture, and it's a very also, I would say, lust-driven project where we set out not to build a tool for women with ADHD, but with women with ADHD. So it's a panel of lead patient users, patient organizations that is governing all the things that we do, and everything that we put into the app is by recommendation on the experts, the females with ADHD.
And this is an international audience, ideally?
So, yes. So again, this warm appreciation of the book that it feels like this ADHD women, it is an international language. So we decided to do it in English straight away. And also for our Danish friends, because even though we're neighbors, Swedes hardly understand what Danish people say. They are better. They understand us much better. But we thought, why not do it in English and see if it is an international issue. And also we have a care view, so you can share your data You can share that with a coach, for example. So the coach, if you're a coach, you can go in and you will talk about the same things. You will talk about, you know, the same issues, and then you can see and you can follow up on what you do, if that actually has any, you know, effect on the most important things in your life. And you set your own goals into the app as well.
It reminds me of I have a timeline, a graphic timeline of all of the various medical ailments. And that I always bring it every time I go see a specialist for something new. I bring this printout of this timeline that I've created. And they always look at me like I'm crazy. But it's amazing. I mean, to me, I feel like the detective with all of the red string on the wall trying to make all these connections. And that actually reminds me quickly, like one of the things that is you talked about in the book, which I had never heard about before, was the fact that stimulant medication was originally stumbled upon as a treatment for headaches, which I feel like we talk a lot about some of the nervous system comorbidities in terms of autoimmune disorders and migraines and PCOS. Like, there's such a long list of comorbidities with ADHD. Is there a biological component to the headaches?
Yes. And isn't it nice that we are finally almost, or soon, I hope, giving all these women and men what they have tried to explain to us, that, you know, the brain and the body is actually connected somehow. But as I can feel as a doctor, I have spent too much time trying to explain to my patients why they are imagining things, right? And now the research are giving them right, and I was wrong, because we don't know everything yet. But we know that there's something in this from these small children that don't want to use socks because they feel that something is, you know, off. To adult women, knowing that their migraines are associated with their ADHD and their fibromyalgia and their pain conditions, that there is something here going on, and I feel that what they're actually telling us is that signals from their own body is equally disturbing and distracting as a stimuli from the external world, right? So it's like, well, this is how you don't tell people no, the light is not too, we used to do that, so no, the light is not too bright, no, the sound is not, no, it doesn't smell. We know now that people with autism, for example, but also with ADD and ADHD, they have a different sensomotoric perception. And I think that is the same thing that we have to acknowledge from the stimuli sent from our own body up to the brain. It's like there's no filter there either. So we are experiencing all this stuff differently than neurotypical people. And I think we're just beginning to scratch on that surface. And I think, you know, the next couple of 10, 20 years in research will be so exciting, because I think we will explore so much of these overlaps and connection that our patients have tried to tell us about, and we just discharge it. Like, no, it's just in your head, you know? Yeah, it is probably also in our head, and it's probably relevant, and it's probably for real. So I think we will have to admit that we have been quite arrogant coming from the medical profession in many areas. And I look forward to it. I look forward to admitting that.
I look forward to it. I mean, I think that's why it's been my hyper-focus now for so many years, because it's so fascinating and it feels like it's changing so dramatically in such a short period of time. And just in terms of like my own understanding, but just in the general conversation about where it's going. And I feel like I've often said on this podcast that I think ADHD is like a gateway diagnosis to so many other, to neurodivergency as a whole, right? And kind of how we start to understand the brain and the neural pathways and receptors and all the biological things. I don't know what I'm talking about, but it's so fascinating to me.
And also hopefully that we will look beyond the diagnosis and look at the neuropsychological processes instead. That's also something that we're building into the app. It's like, we don't really care if you call it ADD, ADHD, autism, or we look at it from a neurodiversity perspective, and then we try to map out how the different brain processes actually can explain what you are experiencing. So then you can get your own brain map. And I think that's super important. For me, that's super important. So to know why certain things are so difficult for me. Okay, so I can put that in the area of my flawed filter function, or I can put it in the area of having not, like, my servo in my volume button. In my reward system, it's like kind of, it's not off, but it certainly works differently than my husband's, for example. So and it explains a lot of what I typically end up struggling with. So I think that's also the future for ADHD, ADD, looking at, okay, so how can we understand the brain? And what do we know from brain science now that can explain a lot of the difficulties that people with ADHD struggle with? And adding on the hormones on top of that, what do we know about the brain and the hormones that can explain how females explain why their PMS, PMDD hits the roof during certain days of the month and so on. So I think there are a lot of data out there that feels really soothing and also empowering to know about, because you have to build self-efficacy. This is not a disorder. This is not something that we can treat and get rid of. We will lean into this and we will live with it. And I think that's so important. And then you have to have like the manual to your brain. I think otherwise it's very arrogant to expect for someone to lean in, really.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. I feel like I could talk to you for hours. Thank you so much.
As you hear, I can talk for hours.
Anyone, if you're listening and you go out and get ADHD Girls to Women, Getting on the Radar, buy it in English now, and you can also listen to it. I listen to the audiobook. It's fantastic. I hope we will wait with bated breath for you have one on neurodivergence in the workplace also, and then you have another book on aging, right?
Aging and ADHD and black belt in parenting. Exactly. So I tried to write a book about like the entire lifespan. This is closest to my heart. It's like a candy, isn't it?
It is. And like you said, the patient, what is it? Anecdotes are, I think, the best part, right? I mean, it's really just, there were so many times where I was moved to tears thinking about these stories of so many experiences that so many of us had, and the just feeling so defeated. And it felt really good to, like you said, put some of the connections together. And I think it takes ADHD researchers to be able to do that, right? To be able to start connecting those dots.
Yeah, I think we do it together. And I think we have a lot of, you know, when we join forces. So you're doing so much, you know, good by moving the needle with what you do and with the podcast and having people talk about it. And so I think from a neuroscientist perspective, I can just, you know, jump on the bandwagon with all the great advocates for female ADHD out there. And the US, of course, is you're always first.
Awesome. Okay, well, I will definitely have a link to Letter Life. I guess at the moment, it's really getting on the wait list. That's what I'm on right now.
Yeah, so we don't want to admit too many people since we are building as we go, but we are trying to admit more and more. So we have, I think we have 1,000 people actually active in Letter Life. Most are Swedish, so it would be awesome to get. I think you probably will get ahead of the line if you register from the US.
Oh, awesome! Well, okay. Well, I'll wait for that because one thing I don't have is patience. So. But thank you so much for spending this time with me, and your research is so incredible, and I'm just thrilled to have discovered you, and so thank you.
Likewise. It's an honor, it's a privilege, and I could have talked the entire night with you.
There you have it. Thank you for listening, and I really hope you enjoyed this episode of the Women and ADHD podcast. If you'd like to find out more about me and my coaching programs, head over to womenandadhd.com. If you're a woman who was diagnosed with ADHD and you'd like to apply to be a guest on this podcast,
Visit womenandadhd.com/podcastguest, and you can find that link in the episode show notes. Also, you know we ADHDers crave feedback, and I would really appreciate hearing from you, the listener. Please take a moment to leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or Audible. And if that feels like too much, and I totally get it, please just take a few seconds right now to give me a 5-star rating. Or share this episode on your own social media to help reach more women who maybe have yet to discover and lean into this gift of neurodivergency. And they may be struggling and they don't even know why. I'll see you next week when I interview another amazing woman who discovered she's not lazy or crazy or broken, but she has ADHD. And she's now on the path to understanding her neurodivergent mind and finally using this gift to her advantage. Take care till then.